Welcome to this episode of the Super Yacht Laundry podcast. Happy New Year to all of you. If you've not caught up on any of the other fabulous episodes, I don't take it personally, but get on with it. Listen to the other episodes. I'm here today with the fabulous Xanthi Bowater. She is gorgeous, sun-kissed. It's really annoying as I sit here with my little blanket, recovering from the flu. In -2 in the UK, but how are you doing, darling?
Yeah, good. I am certainly a lot warmer than -2, so I'm quite the happy little summer baby over here in New Zealand at the moment. But I am very grateful to be here and excited to see what we uncover today. I think it's going to be a bit of fun.
Well, yeah, for the warm up conversation.
Yeah. Exactly. The preempt was pretty good.
Yeah, well, I don't know. We'll go into that, dear listener, a little bit later. But yeah, I'm kind of in a, I don't know. Like I said to Xanthi, maybe it's because my progesterone and estrogen are also low at the moment. I'm in a different kind of mood for things. But before we get on to me, and obviously my attitude problem. I've known each other a year now. You've been moving in the sphere of through well-being and, I don't know, just a nice, new, fresh voice going, what the fuck's going on? Why hasn't anybody sorted anything out yet? I think that's probably the Would you just say that's what you've like?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. It's I've been in yachting for 10 years working on board boats more than that. 2014 I started on boats. God, it's a long time now. It's been the last year that I've kind of moved, well, 18 months I've moved into this crew well-being space and trying to look out for the best of best intentions for our current crew members and all of my colleagues that are still on board yachts and trying to make a difference. Because, yeah, like you say, it's like, why the fuck has nothing changed? It's been 12 years. Why are we still banging the same drum?
Well, now that's a conversation to be had. But let's not start there. Let's go to the origin. So who is Xanthi? Where is she from? What was she doing? Was she always bumming around on boats?
Yeah, I have. I've pretty much always been bumming around on boats. I grew up here in New Zealand. I've just moved back home now after 12 years abroad.
Don't talk about
and...
that.
I've moved back home. I grew up here windsurfing and sailing as a kid, and then I really didn't want to go to university. It was not going to be right for me, and I knew I wasn't going to learn in a university setting, and so I managed to find a course that sent me through 3 months of as my sister really lovingly called it, boat school, and I learned how to be a stewardess and how to fix diesel engines and do all sorts of things, and then that was it. I was off on a plane and I didn't really look back too much.
Learn to be a stewardess fixing boat engines. Honestly, what course was that? If that was in my course, I wouldn't do it.
Well, the funny thing for me, I didn't want to be a stew, and I've absolutely made a career out of being a stewardess. And no hate to stewardesses. I think what we do on board is as skilled as any other department, and it does take a lot of grit to get through a season of other people's dirty laundry and doing perfect table settings every day. So no shade, but I wanted to be on deck when I first got into yachting. And so when I did that course, it was like my absolute dream. They were like, yep, you're going to have to learn. You do your pilot level 2, you'll do your personal watercraft, you'll do a diesel engine, you'll do an outboard maintenance course, you'll do a barista course. You'll learn how to iron sheets.
it was literally how those things are put together. Like
it was hilarious. It was the Maharangi Technical College up in Maharangi in New Zealand, and it still operates actually. It was hilarious. It was such a great course, and I honestly needed it. I needed the 3 months of structure and learning bizarre new skills and the things that I still to this day I'm like, oh, I remember whenever I do a hospital corner after 12 years, I'm still like, and this is how she taught me to do it, you know? It's all
Do
it's
an
all
organ
those little things.
change.
Yeah, exactly.
So
Fix an
random.
outboard engine. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, it was a pretty all like immersive start to yachting. But I absolutely loved it. And then yeah, I did. I dove into my first couple of roles as deckhand or deck stew. And then after a few years of doing that and absolutely loving it, but not really coping with the attitude from my male colleagues, I shifted to the interior department and decided it was easier to be a stewardess and no one question whether I was good at my job than be a half decent deckhand and people always second guessing me and telling me how to do it better. So I made the shift interior.
That's one of the things, obviously I don't get me wrong, I've got all respect to women that go on deck, if you want to. You've got to either be completely, water off a duck's back, like it doesn't even penetrate when you get that constant, I imagine, not all boats, but you will get positions where they're just constantly undermining, kind of, double checking like you're some kind of imbecile. And how that can wear you down as a person.
Absolutely.
I've got, you must have an awful lot of respect for women that go all the way, or they're just, they just got that amazing skill to not absorb criticism.
And I think that's a like that's a huge part of it. I know that the industry has changed dramatically since 2014. There are fewer of those old school captains around, and a lot of the deck crew and those officers and things have all got a slightly more well-rounded view on the world and the fact that us girls can actually, lift heavy things and be good at sailing and, change, God forbid, do an oil change. And so it is, it's definitely we've made really positive changes, but it was hard back then, and it was just a fight that to be honest, I wasn't willing to have. I was like, you know what? If you're going to believe that I'm good at my job, even though I'm like way less experienced on the interior, but you'll trust me with running the whole interior, I'll take it. I'll take it. So yeah, that was actually how I ended up as a stewardess.
That's quite mad, isn't it? Like, I'll give you more. This is one of the things that I imagine over this 2026 will be talked about quite a lot. I'm finding it really fascinating the kind of, it's not like negative, but like the way the industry kind of simultaneously puts down the interior, but then is given vital responsibility to the interior. Do you know what I mean? Like, oh, your job's not, not the, it is, everybody knows that it's difficult, but like not giving it true value, even though, you are the one, the interior team make or break a holiday. And let's be honest, these holiday, it's a holiday at the end of the day. And everybody's, bonus hinges on whether it's a good holiday. So you can slag off, you slag off the interior going, oh, you just make some beds and you just make some drinks. No, we're just making the difference between whether you get a 2 grand tip or a 10 grand tip. So, be nice to us because we're like, yeah,
That's exactly it, though.
you put me in a terrible mood, because as I've asked the engineer to do something and he's just like, oh, no. I'm like, this makes the difference between that woman feeling uber comfortable or this or that. And she, like, it just baffles me. Obviously you were there at the forum, there was a lovely lady that did a seminar on the end of the first day talking about her brain can't compute how the interior is talked down and not given any time and energy, but they're the ones that have the most contact with the principal and the family And they're the ones mm-hmm. that make the difference between whether you're raking it in or not. Because, you know, if you think about it, the whole boat, you know, why don't we get credit?
Yeah, it's interesting. And it's so interesting about that, like, most amount of contact, because, you know, some would argue, like, you know, the captain plans the trips and whatnot with the owners, but actually it's the informal conversations that happen that actually make them not feel like they're turning up to something they've organized, but turning up at home and feeling welcome and feeling, you know, like they didn't have to think about those things because that person has asked them a question that needed to be asked at that exact moment. And I think that's where the interior, where we get overlooked massively as a department, is it's those things that we're not trained in. It's things that we actually have to learn to be a good stewardess or a good interior crew member. I think you do have to learn these unteachable skills. Yeah. And that's what makes a great chief stew.
We create the magic, you know. Let's, you know, if you were going to the Savoy in London on, you know, on a trip, that whole from the doorman at the front door, the receptionist, you know, housekeeper, everybody is trained to the nth degree on how to make that, as soon as you walk in that door, that first impression, how you're treated, how you're spoken to, how you kind of float through this journey and this experience. But I can literally go from working at the Crown Pub down the road and work the next day on a mega yacht dealing with someone who's worth £1 billion.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay, well then, sure.
As long as your CV photo is pretty enough.
Yeah, like, don't get me wrong, looking good and, you know, having youth on your side and all that gets you so far. But, you know, I've worked for super, you know, I've worked for Saudis and stuff like that. They are uber particular. Like, at the end of the day, your pretty face only gets you so far.
And they want you as to it should.
Make their mint tea and how you talk to the women in the family different to the men in the family. And when you go into it, like, these things are insanely complex. But, you know, one of the things that I will bang on about probably this whole year, when it comes to minimum manning in the vessel, the interior team doesn't exist.
No, not at all. Not at all. And it's... It baffles me.
Really, that's not safe. That's not safe.
But then on the contrary, if you look at the emergency procedures, who's getting the first aid kits? Who's getting the blankets? Who's getting food, provisions, water? Like, who's gathering the guests? Who's in charge of, like, mustering the guests? Interior, every time.
Loads of responsibility, but no investment. I just think it's all just a bit skewed. I just don't get it. I don't get it. But, like, when you obviously you ended up working in the interior, did you obviously you didn't want to take on the fight on a daily basis, but were you disappointed that you weren't out there?
Yeah, massively. But it was a funny thing. So I've always worked on small yachts. That's been like my niche. Smaller sailing yachts under like 45 meters. So the reason I think subconsciously that I've done that has been because once I stepped into the interior, I was still asked to go out and help with sailing whenever we put sails up. So I was always part of that deck team, and I was always a crucial part of, you know, whether I was on a winch to put the mainsail up, whether I was on the end of the boom to flake it as it came down, whether I was driving so the captain could be up on the foredeck, whatever it was, I was always like a really integral part of that team. And I think for me, that was a way that I could keep doing something that people would give me credit for, because honestly, at my core, I'm like a golden retriever. I'm like, love me, give me pats, tell me I'm doing a good job, and I will like keep working forever. Like, I won't run out of energy as long as you tell me I'm doing great. And so, like, if I was in the interior, people were always like, oh yeah, great, like, you're doing fantastic, this is great, thank you for this, thank you for that, you know. And I was getting that praise, and then I would be able to go outside and like actually fill my cup by being part of the sailing team and driving the boat or using winches or, you know, like doing the stuff that I really enjoyed. So it was, I was quite fortunate, I guess, or tactical maybe, and I think
it's
more tactical.
And it's a good compromise, you know. It is, you know, for mental sanity, it's kind of, yeah, you're not getting as much time on deck, but at least you're not getting treated differently.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So I always like to talk about highs and lows. Like, when, give me a pinch me moment. Like, you're working on Super Yacht and you're like, fuck yes, this is what it's about. You know, it's, you know, it's that moment where you it crystallizes why you wanted to and why you stuck out being on yachts.
I actually think, funnily enough, that was in, there's been a few. The first one that made me realize I was in the right place was, I was working on a yacht at the time as a deck stew, and it was a 45 meter carbon ketch called Samurai, which has got quite a bad reputation now in terms of not paying bills. So I also didn't get paid. So it was, you know, highs and lows. But we set a speed record going across the Atlantic right after it had been splashed, after a huge refit. I was driving her at the time, and we hit 32.6 knots, I think. Somewhere like that. It was very quick. We sailed that boat everywhere at above 23 knots. If we weren't going that fast, we just turned the engines on. It was insane. The most insane boat I've ever worked on. And it was phenomenal. Just like one of those incredible times. And now I look back on it and I realize how incredible it was. But at the time, it was my first boat. So I was like, this is cool. I'm really excited for a career in this. And I didn't realize that nothing was going to be like that ever again. So yeah, that was a really interesting one, really early on as well.
That's so fast.
Yeah,
that's like, in what world terms, that's fast. You know, considering like what we used to chug around on and what my boats go around on, that's like cruise ships, like cruise at like 20 oh, they can go quite 20, fast as
yeah.
well
23,
28,
I think.
Yeah, yeah. Like 20s. Yeah. You're like, yeah. Like overtaking. Yeah. Get out of my way, cruise ship. We're going.
We actually, on that same crossing, we went through Gibraltar, we were like head on to a cargo ship coming into Gibraltar, but we were under sail. And so we ended up hailing them on the radio, and we're like, we're under sail, because we weren't in the channel yet. We're under sail. Like, you guys need to be there. We're the stand-on vessel here. And they were like, oh, shit, you guys are going so fast. They ended up doing a 360 to get out of our way.
What?
It was insane. We were very fast and loose on that boat back in the day. It was good fun, though. It was just absolute chaos.
Like, yeah. I don't know how many, and obviously people... Obviously, because I spent my life on motor, and I don't think motor can, you know, speed is not really a thing. Like, you know, there's too much stuff that can break, so we just don't go fast. You know, that's why ever we literally crawl from destination to destination. But yeah, fast.
Yeah,
that's cool.
We actually flying. And at the end of that Atlantic crossing, we had to. We couldn't get into the day head because we'd spent our whole crossing from the Med to the Caribbean. We'd spent it on starboard tack, and our day head was on the starboard side of the yacht. So the interior fit out had unstuck itself from the wall and slid against the door. So we couldn't open the day head. And so we had to, like, it was hilarious. We had to like jimmy it open and like, kind of like scooch it back up onto the wall and kind of throw some glue in there and hope that it stuck for the season. But it was honestly, it was a hilarious program, and we did some very cowboy things, and we just kind of made it work. So yeah, it was quite fun. Definite high.
It just scrambles my brain, like, going that fast, like that's fast. Like, I kind of want to experience it, do you know what I mean? Like, I want to be sat there when it's like, and I do highlight the fact sat there, Like, I don't want to have to do anything. I just want to sit.
White knuckles, holding on.
Moving around. And I didn't serve any drinks, that's for sure. No, it's pretty cool. It does sound pretty cool.
Yeah, it is, you know, there's plenty of moments through the years, aren't there? And it is always hard to pick one. Usually people ask where your favourite country is, and I honestly don't have one. I could never say.
I think a true traveller, when you're asked that question, you can't, because everything's different. Mm. You know, you like different aspects of different countries. So it's not like you dislike anywhere. I can't say that I dislike any country, really. Yeah. The only thing I'm not keen on is some yards in Italy. Like, they're not really favourite.
You know what? I don't think you're in a class of your own with that. I think there's a lot of people that agree.
No, I mean, I ended up spending some time in Toulon, which if you're a tourist, that's okay. Mm. But Toulon is not
working.
Because you're always there in the crap time. So it's like winter and... Yeah. You know, I mean,
nothing's open,
and nobody wants to talk to you, and hibernation.
No.
Palma's not like that. I got stuck on a boat in Palma for ages, and Palma's fine. I like, you know, it doesn't matter.
That's, Palma's beautiful in the winter.
Yeah,
I quite like it in the winter.
It's cool. I mean, I've stayed in some rough old crew houses. We couldn't stay on board. They're just not designed for cold time, are they? So, you know, you get them dirt cheap, and there's like, you know, there's eight of you staying in this, you know, amazing place, but it's cold. You get like a little electric heater in the corner. I remember one year we had a yard period and it was raining all the time. And it just, you know, it's that cold. I mean, obviously I'm from the UK. Cold, wet and damp is different to dry cold.
Yeah, it's just cold.
I don't think I've ever hugged an electric heater quite so much. Palmer's good. Palmer doesn't shut down, and they're still nice to you, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Some areas of France, they're not quite so friendly in the winter. Overstimulated, I think, through the summer. They're just like, no, we're not talking to anybody.
Yeah, they're sick of all the tourists by the end of it.
Yeah, just not nice. So obviously that's, you know, that's a high. What has it been a low? And then obviously did the lows end up with you going, oh, I can't be fucked with this anymore, like I'm done?
Yeah. So I had a incident when I first got into yachting. Funnily enough, I don't think this is my low, but what happened on from this is definitely my low. So I was working on a yacht. We were in a yard period and a crew member sexually assaulted me. And then very fortunate for me, the captain on board got rid of that crew member the following day, shipped him back home. But that was all the conversation was. There was no further, there was no counselling, there was no checking in, there was no 6 months down the line, hey, are you okay? There was nothing. There was just a fairly large amount of alcohol. A trip to the Caribbean, and you know, you were back on the horse and you carried on. So that kind of plants the seed for then about 3 years later, when I hadn't actually spoken to anyone about the sexual assault in those 3 years, and I ended up on a yacht in Norway and Scotland, so super isolated. And I was up there and I was sole stewardess on a boat. With five crew in total. And it was, you know, a pretty long summer to be away from all of your friends. My partner at the time was back in Spain. He was having a great old time, busy time in Palma, as the rest of everyone else was. I just ended up falling into a really dark depression, which was really hard for me in such a beautiful place as the Norwegian fjords. It's really it was a really weird time for me to be in such like a dark mindset, but in such a beautiful setting. It was really hard to comprehend, but I kind of managed to nurse myself and my mental state through that season. And when I got back to the Mediterranean at the end of the summer, I resigned from the boat. And I actually, that was it. I had to leave yachting for, I think I left for 2 years, 3 years. And I actually knew that I needed to go home and do some reparation work for myself and get myself through all of it that I'd been building for years at that point, before I could ever go back onto boats. And that's exactly what I did. So it was a huge pivotal moment for me. It really did make me actually think, you know, I can't do this. I can't stay in yachting and keep doing this to myself. I had to change.
I think it's one of those things. You know, obviously, we've spoken to Amanda Beaver. Obviously, I've spoken to her on a podcast, and you know, she talks. Yeah. We've got another episode coming up where she talks about trauma and how to deal with trauma, because trauma doesn't go away, you know, and it you know, thinking about obviously your situation when you went to the fjords in Scotland. Do you think it all just slowed down long enough for that not to be suppressed anymore? It became quiet enough where you can't just ignore it through the noise and the chatter and everything else. Mm. Being super busy, it just slowed down and go, that's still there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly it. It was just enough of enough of quietness. And it was not a great position for me on the boat. The captain was a bit of a bully. He actually, I think you spoke about it before, when people will just tell you that, you know, you're not good at your job or whatnot, but they don't realize that you tell that to the interior team, you make a comment about the interior team, and that does impact your end of season tip or whatnot. And that was exactly what happened to me. Is just before we picked up charter, yes, the captain came to me and said, I don't like your style, I don't like what you're doing here, I don't like what you've done, and had me in tears. The guests had already landed at the airport and I was in tears cleaning the fucking floor in the VIP cabin, and I was just like, you know what, like, how on earth can you end up in a situation like this, so remote and so ignorant to the issues that are happening on board?
How stupid is he?
Honestly,
how stupid could you actually be? Like, just before you're trying to get the most out of your crew and expect them to perform, you do that. Talk about self-sabotage.
Yeah, it was pretty wild. And it was like, I was gobsmacked. I was only 21 or 22 at the time, maybe. And the chef, who's a really good friend of mine still, he actually went up to the captain and was like, pretty much grabbed him by his throat and was like, sort your shit out. You have to go in there and apologize to Xanthi, because she's the one that's going to make this charter sink or swim for us. Like, go in there now. I'm not having any of this shit. Sort it out. Like, I don't want to hear anything else. And I'm like, in what situation does a chef turn around to the captain and have that kind of like ballsy conversation? Like, I'm forever grateful for him and what he did for me. But yeah, the captain couldn't even bring himself to apologize to me in the end of it.
The thing is, chefs get it, you know, like chefs, you know, we are the ones, you know, they create good food, but if there's not good service, then it doesn't matter whether the food's good. So, like,
exactly,
the chef got it. He understands. Like, what are you doing? You're literally sabotaging this whole, you know, because it's a group activity. You are a team to do this and deliver this. You've literally just sabotaged us, like, literally, an hour before? Idiot. Mm. Absolute idiot.
Yeah. It was pretty wild.
I just, you know, it bleeds into the fact, you know, not everybody's meant to be a leader. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree. I really agree with that. And I think the skill of leadership is not one that we teach or that we encourage people to learn. And I think, I mean, you were obviously there at the forum, and I think there's a lot more discussion happening around that now. And people are realizing that the Helm course is not covering enough about people management and leadership as it should. But I think, it's definitely something people are now starting to take notice of. And ask questions about leadership courses. I've had it within the Wave Wellness app. I actually had a captain come to me last week and ask if we've got more resource for leadership courses and training for leaders and HODs, because that's what they need. That's the information they're needing now.
I think leadership, I actually said this on another episode, not everybody, because of the way it works, obviously the only way to get promotion and hit the top is to, you know, climb up and then you end up being man manager. The problem is there's nowhere for people to go that aren't meant to be managers. You know, we've all got our strengths and our weaknesses, but I think the industry leaves itself a little bit open to promoting people into managerial man management roles, which they are not suited. And it's not because they're just, their talents would be something else in on land. There's just no way that, you know, they would probably even lean into being a man manager because it's not a natural thing for them to do. But in the industry, there's nothing else to do. So you get a whole bunch of people that probably aren't really the best man managers, you know. And then you couple that with the fact that there isn't, you know, there's no real training and all of that kind of stuff. It is the recipe for disaster.
Oh, you know, absolutely.
They're just making it up as they go along.
Yeah. And it is, like, I think that's what I've seen with, you know, I've had great captains and I've had some pretty awful ones over the years. And I think it's none of it's come down to things that they've learned in a classroom. It's come down to their own people skills and their own way, like their natural skill set. And we don't have a marker for that and we don't have a way to like wheedle them out. And it really is like the people that become captains or first officers are the ones that stick around long enough and pay the most to do all of their training to get to that position. It's not necessarily the people that are best at managing a team of people or, you know, dealing with like HR style problems. It's the people that have managed to stick around long enough to get the qualifications.
I think that definitely could be, you know, a route to a lot of problems that you end up getting on board, because they don't have, you know, they don't have the natural inclination. Couple that with the fact that they're not naturally that way inclined, you know, you get haphazard man management. You know, is it surprising that some of the situations that occur? And then if you couple that individual with, I don't know, a trauma of their own, substance abuse and everything else, it's like the perfect storm of,
Well, I think as well, like I've seen it in interiors where the chief stewardess has got like no people skills. They've been, you know, maybe they've been a junior stew, they went in as a stole stew, then they might have been a second stew and they've learnt from a chief, but then they've been thrown in the deep end as a chief stewardess and they know how to do the job to a T faultlessly. They can do the second stewardess's job, but they have never been told how to let go of the reins and manage those people to get the best out of their team. And it's something that I know that Kaylee from Hill Robinson is really passionate about the subject as well, and like building up those like skill sets for people to actually manage it. And it's not even like people that are listening to this from like shore-based roles, if you're out there, we are that far behind. we're in the stone age.
Like going back to what I said originally, you know, you decided to start what you're doing now because how is this still the same? Why has nothing changed? You know,
yeah.
I mean, I've been involved, for 5 years now, and still having very similar conversations. Although, to be fair, things are progressing. You know, there are more voices, which I think is helping. You know, I've been talking about a lot of the stuff that, you know, we're talking about now and, you know, issues that you're raising for, you know, for a long time. More voices helps, you know, it really does help to add more weight to, right, okay, well, I said this, but then she's saying that as well. And she's saying that as well. And you know what I mean? It's all kind of, you know, I do think, you know, there is a lot of noise about this kind of stuff at the moment. yeah, we just need to keep banging on about it and being annoying, I think.
Yeah, and I think that's it as well. Like, I've always said this, like, when I, like, a lot of the topics that I kind of work around with Wave Wellness, and, you know, I'm, for the majority of the conversations I'm involved in, it's around mental health, because it seems to be the easy one for a lot of people to grab hold of what we do. And, you know, it's, I'm there, like, yeah, mental health is something we need to start to take notice of in the industry. There are people like Emma Kate Ross with Seize the Mind who are doing fantastic things. Like, there's people out there that are doing these mental health first aid courses. Guest Ayami have started doing them. You know, all of these things that are out there happening.
Mm-hmm.
We, it doesn't mean that one person has got that corner covered. We all have to be out there and, like, be banging the same drum, because all of these issues, they're not going to be heard unless, you know, everyone has a voice and can actually stand up and be like, no, this is a problem. This is something we need to start focusing on, and we need to put more resource into it, or, like, build something for it.
I think, every industry has problems. There's not an industry on the planet that doesn't have its own issues and its own nuances to kind of maneuver. I think what's different now is just the industry. There's just so many people, like, obviously we started the conversation. I'm just bored of it. Like, I'm bored of, like, hearing the chat and nothing is really going on. Like, amazing, passionate people, great organizations, all talking about this stuff, but it still doesn't seem to be moving. This, like, honestly, it would be easier to bring up the Titanic and try and get it going again, I think, you know, just what was the original idea with Wave Wellness? What was, you know,
so
you
just so Wave Wellness, I took some years out and I went into shore-based life. And I actually worked in marina management. So I was working for big companies, usually city councils, actually, who have fantastic resource for their employees. And one of those resources that they have is something that the corporate world calls an EAP, an employee assistance program. The yachting world, as it turns out, has never heard of. This is, like, pretty standard in any company in New Zealand. I think the UK is pretty similar, and Australia is pretty hot off the mark too. It basically means that all their employees get free access to mental health care. They get discounted, like, they get to go get their eyes checked at the local optometrist. They can go to the local doctor for a discount rate. They can get access to coursework, all of these things to build their benefit scheme in a non-monetary way. And they all get access to this. I utilized that massively. As I say, I came home in a bit of a mental health crisis. I was given access to this, and it really did help me kind of pull through to the point where I was able to return back to yachting. But I got to boats and was like, oh, shit. There is literally nothing here for me. Like, I had a conversation, because I was very comfortable with the captain I joined, his old friend of mine. And I was like, look, I'm coming back into this. I don't know how this is going to go for me. I think I'm ready. My therapist thinks I'm ready. But if I need to have an hour-long conversation with my therapist at any point during the season, are you going to be okay with that? And he was like, yeah, we've got Starlink. No worries. You can go find a quiet place, sit down, have a call, whatever. Do what you need to do. And I was like, oh, cool. Okay, sweet. The industry's moved forward. I spoke to two friends on the dock that afternoon, and they were both like, you said what to your captain? You said that you didn't know whether mentally you were going to get through the season. I was like, well, yeah. Like, I don't want – we were going up to Tahiti in a week's time. I was like, I don't want to end up in Tahiti in the Tuamotus and be like, hey, I'm not coping, and it'd be the first thing that he hears. Like, God forbid. And they were like, oh, we'd be fired in a heartbeat. Like, no questions asked, we'd be let go. And it got me thinking, I was like, holy shit. This industry hasn't changed. I got lucky, the boat that I jumped back on, because I knew the captain really well and I trusted him and we had that friendship there already. Everybody else in the industry was still in the same shit fight that I'd been in 4 years ago when I left. And it was, for me, that, like, really hit home. And Wave Wellness was that. I was like, I can't let my friends go through another season of not having support and people having an excuse to say that why it couldn't be done. I was like, I can make this happen. I can get people that understand the yachting industry. All of the therapists that I work with are all ex-yacht crew. They know what our schedules are like. They know how hard it is for us on board. And so they can actually have real conversations with people. So it doesn't have to be an hour. It could be 20 minutes and it might be at a really short notice, but it works for them and it works for us. And it, like, for me, Wave Wellness was about not giving like management companies an excuse, or any sort of management, an excuse not to have that support, because it's there and it's built and it is like made for our industry. That was, yeah, it's the only way I could get an answer for it.
It's, well, you know, it doesn't surprise me. I don't know whether it surprises anybody, you know, but it's that, you know, you were lucky to have a relationship that you could be that honest, you know, and I think that's the difference, you know, just being able to have that flexibility, you know what, I'm not 100%, but if I do have the opportunity to do X, Y, and Z, I think I'll be fine, you know, and most people, you know, everybody manages stress all the time, every day, you know, and but on, you know, on land, it's, you know, potentially easier to access, you know, after work, you go see your therapist, you know, or you have a conversation, or you go see somebody, or you zone out, or, you know, go and do an activity or whatever. Obviously on board, it's
or you go home and bitch to your partner about it. Like the easiest kind.
Yeah. I don't know why. Well, we all understand why it's so hard. You know, people don't want to talk about it, because it is true. Everybody knows, you know, if you show a moment of weakness, or that you might be high drama, and, you know, the attitude on in the industry is like, you know, let's get rid of you, get somebody in that we can work, you know, nonstop, and not think that there's any consequences. And is that, you know, and that's really what it is, because they, you know, it's the industry likes to, well, it gives importance to stuff that doesn't really matter and makes it, you know, life or death, when really life or death is, you know, the stuff that they really don't want us to talk about or deal with. Do you know what I mean? Like, not being able to do that hospital corner exactly that way. And then you get berated by your bloody chief stew, like you've literally just, you know, gone to the toilet on the bed or something. Do you know what I mean? Like,
it's so true.
And then you go to her and you go, you know what, I've just had some bad news, family member, not direct family member, there's a funeral, I'm just feeling a bit low, so I might not be on like full beans, but, you know, just bear with me and be aware of that. How, it's just reasonable, isn't it? That's just reasonable human behavior. Yeah. Like, why is what you're creating? And you know, you've had pushback, haven't you? When it comes to.
Yeah. I've done some kicking up some storms in my my day and questioning. You know, I've had captains come to me since I set up Wave Wellness and be like, it's dangerous that you're giving crew members the power to be able to seek mental health support without the captain knowing, because if I'm the captain, I need, don't think you do, need to know the mental state of every crew member that I'm going to see. And in my head, I'm sitting there smiling going, okay, wow, this is, tell me what you really think. And I'm sitting there going, if you can't sit around a crew mess table and understand that that person in front of you is going through something, you're the problem.
Yeah, but not being
because
funny.
You really. Should be.
So get, if you take what he said, you know, like what you're saying, you know, I need to know for the safety and everything. Does he work on a boat which is like Deadliest Catch? Do you know what I mean? Like, in all honesty, let's be really, really honest, you know, about what our boats do. Our boats go to fun places where the weather is fine. They don't generally go out anywhere in crap weather unless you've got a captain that's not very good at looking at weather charts. But do you know what I mean? Like, I would buy into his for the safety of everybody on board, I need to know their mental health is vitally important. In the same breath, you get captains protecting sexual predators on board and not firing them.
Yeah.
What are you talking about? The boat's not going to fucking sink if you're having a bad day.
Yeah.
But you could traumatize a woman for her whole entire life because you've kept that arsehole on board because you've known him for 10 years.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
See, look, there's my parent. Like, I told you she was
Yeah, I love her. Get the attitude going.
This is what literally is grinding my gears. Like, let's get the bigger picture stuff. You know, and like I said, I can buy into what that captain's saying. For safety, I need to know if you're going to do, you know, okay, let's say commit suicide or all of those kind of things. Let's be honest about what the job is and how dangerous it is. Because, yes, it always has the potential. It can sink. But let's be honest, the downtime, the locations where it goes, it's not like that. It's not like Deadliest Catch. We're not pulling in those crab pots in, you know, 5 meter swell. We're literally serving coffees. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, and I think the dangers are less visceral in our industry, but I think there's certainly a lot of underlying things, and I think the stress of our industry has been allowed to become one of probably, I would say, our biggest danger. Because the lack of sleep that people were getting, which is then in turn meaning that doing, you know, late night watches in the bridge, particularly, you know, if you're nodding off in the bridge in the med, chances you're probably going to hit an Italian fishing boat because they won't have their lights on, and you know, like, there's all of these things that does add up to, you know, with the if you've got crew in close quarters, you've got that sexual assault risk, you know, if they're not vetted properly or if we haven't taken full precautions there and the crew aren't safe in those circumstances. So it's a really different risk factor. So I think saying that, you know, how can I can't have my crew accessing mental health support behind my back without me knowing is all good and well with some measures in place. I think it has a place. If someone is suffering from anxiety and they are struggling to get through day to day and they can talk to someone about that and they can work through those anxieties, that's not going to impact the way that they are working, the way that they turn up to work, but it is going to positively impact the way that they can contribute to that team. So in my opinion, I don't think that having access...
How it's dangerous. You know, it's not like you've got... Yeah. A whole bunch of schizophrenic bloody crew members, and do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I get it if it was extreme cases, but most of this is preventative. It's not the crew member. You know, we need to get into a space where it's okay. You know, the whole world is like talking about mental health with youngsters, with kids, and everything else. Like, just being a bit more freer to kind of like, okay, well, it's natural to kind of struggle with this bit. You do a few bits. You get, you're fine, you know, a bit like you know, being honest about your own recovery. You know, my husband's got like this income protection, and the whole idea of income protection is you don't need to wait until you're burnt out and destroyed, which I think that's probably what that captain's worried about.
Yeah.
You can prevent it from happening. So therefore you keep said good crew member.
Yeah.
And then you know, you're fighting a lot smaller fires. So I kind of
I like to think of it as like we're your insurance. It's your risk mitigation for burnout. That's what we're shooting for. You know, like I keep seeing this narrative in yachting at the moment of like, you know, the new generation of crew are not hardy enough. They can't cope with the seasons and, you know, they last a season and they're too exhausted or they all want to go on holiday and they want to do this, that and the other. And I'm like, well, if that's what we're seeing and it is the whole narrative, then why are we still complaining about it? Because if that's going to be the attitude of the next generation that's coming through and they're demanding that we do better or more for them, then we have to do that because we can't keep, you know, all of us are in our 30s now. We're going to be in our 60s real soon. And that's all, you know, we can't keep running the boats. We actually have to change the industry to what this next generation is standing up and asking for. And at the moment, we're like a deadlock with them. Everyone's in this Mexican standoff of, you know, they're all petals and the snowflakes and they're this and they're that. And that, you know, they just don't work hard. And it's like, well, no, maybe they actually have got it right. They don't want to get to burnout.
They're more informed than any generation before. So like, say, for instance, yeah, because of the internet, they know that there is a different way. Like, you just look on land. They can see what normal HR looks like, what normal support looks like. And then they come into the industry and go, well, that's a bit weird.
Why are you not doing that?
So it doesn't even need to be, you know, it's, I think they're, you know, it is fabulous because they are, you know, they might not even be demanding. They're just, you know, it's blaringly obvious now that there is a whole bunch of stuff that could be implemented, that could be available, that would fix a whole bunch of problems. And where we're at now is a lot bunch of people like you, me and myself are like, why are we not doing it? Like, literally, why? Because it's not like reinventing the wheel. You don't have to reinvent these things. We just need to like kind of copy and paste and tweak it a bit. And then it will be really applicable. And, you know, everybody then goes off, has fantastic careers, enjoys themselves, happy days.
Exactly. And that's it. It's like, I would never claim to have reinvented the EAP. I have copy and pasted a system that is tried and true. And you know what? The funny thing for me is that most of the owners of the boats in their businesses that they're running shoreside, in their businesses that are earning their money, where they have employees, they will have an EAP in place. They will have some sort of service for their employees to this kind of scale. And for me, it kind of blows my mind that it's not already been like demanded. And I know that there's a couple of programs that in the industry that have got programs like this. And it's because the vessel employees are directly linked to the HR teams of the company that is like the mother company. And those are the places that we're seeing this come through. It's not coming through anywhere else. And everyone refers to those amazing, you know, EAP provided vessels. They're unicorns over there. Oh my God, they get a health budget every year. They can spend 300 euros on something health related, be it a massage or a spa day or a this or a that, you know, like, oh my God, unicorn. I'm like, it doesn't have to be. That's just investing in your people.
Well done. You've cracked it. Woo-hoo! It's just like this. I'm so sarcastic. When I shouldn't probably go to these meetings because I'm too sarcastic, really. And when people are like, you've done this, I'm like, right. You are next. Like when my husband's like, I've unloaded the washing machine. Well done. Congratulations.
Amazing.
Let me get you a medal.
I've got to go and start just here.
I just don't know whether I'm ready for I'm good for these kind of groups, especially in my current state.
Refer to it as your current state. Love your current state.
I'm gonna get into trouble for sure. Well, it's just, you know, 2025, I was probably a bit quiet. Let's be honest. There was lots of stuff going on. Loads of people were talking the talk and doing stuff. And you know what? Like, I've kind of been in the game and around for a while. I'm just like, I'm just going to let you guys do some stuff and just watch. I'm going to be like this weird voyeur person and just let the rows kind of break out here, there and everywhere. Mm-hmm. There were some great rows on LinkedIn last year. Oh, it was so good. You know, it's like, yay. A bit like, you know, it's like Gladiator, you know, they're in the pit, they are fighting to the death. But, you know, going back to your captain, it's, you know, is it a clash of ideas? Probably not. I don't think it is a clash of ideas. There is, you know, and obviously when we talk about the younger generation not being able to work hard, I think the younger generation are just so well informed. They're like, I need more reason to do it rather than just this blind optimism. I do think they think about it a bit too much. And I do think, you know, they should relax. You know, health is great. 8 hours sleep is great. But you're actually in the time of your life where 8 hours sleep doesn't really matter that much. When you're my age, you'll become obsessed about it. So while you're not that, you can bounce back on 2 hours sleep. Do it.
Do it.
It's never going to come again.
Yeah, and also, it's so fun when you can do it, when you can go out, stay out all night, party as hard as you like, get in, have 2 hours of sleep, wake up, make everybody bacon and eggs for breakfast, and crack into a day. Best feeling in the world until 2 p.m. and you crash really hard, but like, best feeling in the world.
Well, especially from a female perspective, if you're listening to this and you're on board and you're like 20 and you're doing that ironing right now, I kind of missed the laundry a lot. I feel like it was a bit of a sanctuary where, you know, the machines are going, you got your earplugs in, I'm just, you know, ironing. Nobody was talking to me. That's good stuff. Yeah. When you become a chief stew, all you want to do is go back into the laundry. Trust me.
Yeah. Cleaning lint filters. Give me that.
Listening to this, now I know a lot of you are health bunnies and you want to look good because obviously the photos are important, but please, while you can, do go out, do have fun, do stay up late, because there will literally, it's like a switch turns off. Definitely, you know, it starts to turn off at 30. By 35, it's off. Like, you will not want to go out until 3 o'clock in the morning. So while you can work an 18-hour day on 3 hours sleep, do it. Just do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just those times will never come again. And then you're just going to be bored and annoyed with yourself because you went for a run and you didn't stay up late, turn to that beautiful boy in auntie.
Oh, God.
We all had one.
I saw that little glint. Oh, it's so true, though. It's like, and, you know, you asked about the highs and the lows earlier in this, and I think that's a big part of yachting, is that they are so intertwined, the highs and the lows. The highs will be, you know, the day that you drop off a 7-week charter that you didn't even get tipped from because it was the boss, you know, and you've had 7 weeks of absolutely grinding your ass. But then you go out and you have this huge night in St. Bart's and you meet amazing people and you're getting thrown around the dance floor by some gorgeous Italian man, and like, live for those. And like, it's all of those tiny little moments, I think, that make yachting such an amazing career. And it's like, you don't get this shit working a 9 to 5, because we don't work 9 to 5. We put in all of that extra and we deal with so much extra shit that all of the good karma has to come back to us at some point. You know, the yin and the yang, we have to get some amazing things out of it. And whether it is, you know, one of my favorite things I ever saw at sea was watching flying fish fly through phosphorescence. So they were like, all of the phosphorescence was stuck to these flying fishes. And all the only thing I can describe them of is as fairies. They just look like fairies dancing over all of these waves. And I will never forget it in my life. But it's like those tiny little moments that would have been 10 seconds of my life that I won't forget. And I will take that with me forever. And there's going to be shit times, and there are shit times, but it's like, oh, it's, that is like my one thing to the next generation coming through, is just like, relish those amazing times, because they are so much better than any other part of the world.
I think one of those things, and why, you know, obviously you can tell me if it's true or not, like why I do what I do and why these issues bother me, and why, because of those, I had amazing moments, and I just want other women on board to have those moments, you know, those moments where, you know, you'll remember it for a lifetime, you'll challenge yourself as a person, you'll evolve as a person, you'll get to do some fab stuff. You know, it is an insane learning environment for a woman to experience. You know, it's not for the faint-hearted. It doesn't last for, you know, not, it doesn't work out for everybody. But most who go on board and enjoy themselves, you know, it is that incredible life-changing experience. And I think one of the things why, you know, I have decided, you know, had days where I'm like, it's not working. So, you know, I might bow out and just annoy my husband and just try and work him to death instead. rather than trying to kind of do these things myself, you know, and try and make an impact. But whenever I'm in that mindset where I just want to, I'm done, there's always I always get a message. It's always, every time I'm like, no, I'm obviously not meant to do this. Let's back away. And I always get a message. I'm like, no, I can't just stand by and know. Because this is where there are some solutions to a lot of these problems. You know, that's where you're coming into the sphere. So reason why we're probably sticking out is because we see the problem, but we're now starting to see solutions. So we can't stop now.
No. And I think that's it. I think there is a lot. I don't know. I don't know whether I had my blinkers on before I started Wave Wellness, but since I started building this business 18 months, 2 years ago, I think there's been a huge shift. There's conversations that, you know, that are happening and they're not happening behind closed doors anymore. They're happening at the Super Yacht Forum, at the Mets Trade, you know, yacht show. Like, it is the biggest industry show, and we're having conversations about crew mental health and how we can improve well-being on board. Like, when has that ever happened before? We're having these, you know, podcasts like this, you know, we're having these conversations, we're having chats on social media. I've done Instagram lives with people about there've been actual tooth and nail scraps on LinkedIn. Yeah, exactly. It's like all of these things. Like, I think we are seeing changes, and I know both you and I are probably of the same stance that, like, it's not enough and it's not happening quick enough, but it is happening. And I think that's the first step, is that it is happening. It's just, we need to be the fire that lights it and, you know, and really, really gets us cracking.
Like I said to you before we came on, you know, I'm just bored. I'm bored of hearing, you know, the amount of stories about bad things that happen to women on board still going on, still, you know, arseholes getting nine lives and reinventing themselves going on. Like, it's a conveyor belt of destroying women's lives, you know, and that's before you even get onto Paige and what horrors happened to her. I'm just not up for it anymore. Like, we've got to, you know, everybody's talking about it, and, you know, they might have a bit of fatigue about the whole mental health scenario, but there's a lot of really linked into mental health. The industry does have a few dark problems. Like I've always said, if it goes wrong, so most of the time it will go wrong in a really catastrophic way. And from my perspective, most of the time it's women that get in the brunt of this crap. So I'm up for just ending it. I'm just gonna end it. I'm just gonna end
all of this
and this crap. Like, I know nobody wants to talk about it, but I don't care. You can ignore it as much as you want, but it's happening. It's repetitively happening. You know.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear that. You know, this guy that we've known that's notorious for years attacked loads of women still on board. How?
100%. 100%. And I don't have the answers, but I think there's starting to be a lot more reporting on it, and we're starting to kind of figure out how reporting might work. I know that there's a few systems that people are trying to trial at the moment with, like, panic buttons and things, but there is actually a really difficult piece that I don't think anyone really considered, as to, it's all good and well having a panic button, but who does it call?
Mm.
Because if it's calling the captain and the captain's the perpetrator, then look, you're shit out of luck.
It's all the reporting systems as well. They can't be reporting to the captain and the management company. No. And let's be honest, most of the time, a lot of these issues are problems that don't get resolved by captains and management.
100%.
No, I'm not saying 100%. There is, you can't report. It's got to be something that's completely autonomous from, you know, yeah, from the industry.
But there is, like,
at least we're talking and about looking into these things.
And there's people that have made these systems. I know that there's systems out there that have been put through their paces and are being trialed and trying to be implemented. But then the industry as well doesn't want this. That's a really big problem. So we can do everything we can to create these systems, but there's a huge grey area around this, like shroud of secrecy, because we're the superyacht industry, so everything must be kept behind the curtain, and we can't have this sort of reporting being out there. We can't give anyone the ability to have this sort of reporting. And then, you know, that, you know, crew are there going, well, hang on, we want to be kept safe and we want to be able to feel like we can have these conversations with someone that we trust. And so there's like this tug of war that's happening as well, I think, with a lot of that. And it will be interesting, because I think the only way that it can be solved is if either flag state or some governing body implement it, or more likely, insurance.
You will see. I mean, that's a whole other conversation, and we've already spoken for a while now.
I can talk all night, Therese.
We can park that one for now. I'll tell you some stuff off camera if you want about all of that kind of jazz. But yeah, 2026, I think, you know, year of the horse, we're all about to get some shit done. I think it's the best way to describe it. And I think one of the things that I'm really excited about at the moment is true collaboration. Like I said, you know, it's now emerged where it was just me and two other people. There is now a whole bunch of women that are all doing their own thing in their spheres and stuff like that, but they're not afraid of working together. You know, they're not ring fencing what they're doing, scared that someone's going to take it. You know, the more we push all together, the more everybody will be better off, you know, and the money, you know, money and opportunity comes, but you can't, you know, not work together. We won't, you know,
no, and I think, you know what, that's been my whole business is built on collaboration. I am not a mental health provider. I'm not a financial advisor. I'm not any of the services that I provide. And so collaboration is my only way forward. And that has been since inception with Wave Armis on every front. It has been collaboration over competition in every part of it. And I think, like, it's so nice to hear other people talking in that light, because I think as an industry, we're very inclined to be quite competitive and quite secretive or protective of our patch. And it's nice to kind of see that shift, I guess, and like have other people that are willing to jump on that bandwagon. So, 2026, the year of collaboration.
It might be the year of collaboration from people that, I don't know, I might say something a bit political now, but generally people that run companies that haven't been on board don't get it. Do you know what I mean? Like it can be really difficult for them to collaborate, but I think you're an ex-crew member, you get it. So you'd be up for collaborating because we're all about getting together, getting the job done kind of thing. And I think that's one of the things I've struggled with, is because the people that haven't been on board, they say they want to collaborate, but they really don't.
Yeah, I find that quite an interesting take. And it's interesting because you just said people that run companies, whereas I've found famously Kaylee has not worked on board. No. you've spoken, I think you've had Kaylee on board to speak, haven't you?
I presume so. I speak to her all the time. Probably.
I love it a bit, but I think she is actually probably one of the people that like epitomizes that collaboration for me at the moment. She is bringing together so many people for a huge collaboration in the industry, and I think it's so valuable. But you are right, there's so many people that are running businesses in the industry that haven't worked on board. They might have had a yachting adjacent role and think that they understand it, but it is that living in a cabin, sharing a bunk bed as an adult teaches you how to share.
Mm. Doesn't it?
It is, It will break even the most stubborn only child out of their ways.
Boats are all right, but some, there was a couple of boats I worked on and I didn't last very long, but they were like coffins. They were so tiny. Like literally, truth. I couldn't cope when the ceiling was like, I could literally like lift my head up and headbutt it. Like, I don't like that. I need a little bit more
You've
space.
Stood next to me. I'm 6 foot.
I know.
I can't do it anymore.
I really always request you to sit down when I'm around because I don't think it's really fair, to be honest. Right, we better wrap this up. Let's finish up 2026. What do you want out of it? Let's manifest. Everybody loves a bit of manifest. Ooh, we're in January.
It's manifest.
Manifest.
It's like it's a full moon today, isn't it? Or tomorrow. Great for manifesting. I think 2026 for me is about seeing the seeds that I planted in 2025 and that, like, as an industry at the yacht shows and things like that, actually starting to like start to produce and start seeing things move, you know, having conversations, like really fruitful conversations with captains that are interested in making real change for like their one vessel. It might be one vessel, you know, one vessel there, one vessel there. And it's like seeing those conversations being had. That for me is what 2026 is all about. It's about individuals making changes, because I think if we can start having those individual changes, it's going to snowball. This industry is going to change rapidly.
Oh, it's changing. The lower my progesterone and estrogen levels get, the more.
You're gonna turn up to Papa Yacht Show and be like, right, who am I taking?
I'm not at Papa Yacht Show, but I don't think, as it stands at the moment, I won't be there this year, but it might change. I've just got to like stick my child somewhere, like leave her under the stairs. Yeah, she can get herself to school, it'll be fine.
I changed my vision for 2026. You're going to be in Papa. That's what we're manifesting here.
It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. I hope you get all you wish for in 2026. Thank you for coming on. It's been a real joy.
Thank you. It's been a treat. Absolute treat.
For you guys listening, I hope you enjoyed that episode. It went on a little bit longer. It probably could have gone on for longer than that, but I'm going to call it a day right now, and we will catch up with Dunthi probably at another moment in time. But until then, there's lots more episodes to come. And if you fancy something different, I have interviewed some boys in the Balls of Wisdom series, so check that out as well. Until the next time, take care.